Seconds, free minds, free people. This is a production of the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. The Box. Inside. Outside. On.
Hi, and welcome to The Box. I'm Katrina Anderson, Director of Government Affairs at the Commonwealth Foundation, and I'll be your host today. I'm pleased to welcome Marcia Lampman back to the podcast. She's the Executive Director of the House Liquor Control Committee. Thanks for joining us, Marcia.
Thanks for having me on again, Katrina.
Now, in June, you were on the podcast and we talked in detail about wholesale privatization. And if anyone didn't get a chance to hear that, you can find it on our website. I think it was very good. But today, I really want to talk about where liquor privatization stands, because we've been hearing a lot of talk about a compromise bill that was put forth in the House. So can you confirm that and tell us a little bit about what that is?
I like to call it a compromise piece. It's actually a piece of legislation that a handful of the House Liquor Control Committee members put together in late June. We came up with it by listening closely to the debate as it evolved in the Senate and some of the concerns that specific senators had with House Bill 790 as it passed the House. We tried to incorporate language that would alleviate some of those concerns.
Let's talk about that, because I know I was at the Senate hearings, and one of the concerns that came up was actually on the wholesale issue, and their concern was that they were going to lose money, the state was going to lose money by doing divestiture. How does your bill kind of compromise with that?
Yes, well, the Senate was concerned that we would, like you said, lose money or that we would undervalue our wholesale system, because obviously it is a very valuable asset that the state controls right now. So in order for them to feel more comfortable with the value that was assigned to the wholesale, the Senate had worked on language that would require a study by the Legislative Budget and Finance Committee. And that study, the crux of it would be to determine the value of the wholesale system. Now, what we did with the compromise piece, as was put together in the House, is we did this study as well. We have LBFC doing a study to determine how much the system is worth. And the study in the House version is going to be much more quickly completed
than what was in the Senate. And how quickly is that?
It's approximately 6 months.
That after is much quicker.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe the Senate version didn't have the study either begun or completed until 2015. But we wanted to get things rolling on privatization, and we think we've held onto the system long enough.
Well, I think that's great, too, because as we discussed before, wholesale privatization is a really important part that most people, when they think about liquor privatization, they want to see the new selection, the lower prices than competition. That really comes from the wholesale side.
Absolutely. So, as I had said, the Senate was concerned about the valuation and giving away a Commonwealth asset. So what we decided to do is, once the study determines a value, if that value is greater than $500 million, which is what the House was saying it would approximately be, then we would go forward with the privatization of the wholesale language that was contained in House Bill 790 as it passed the House. If, however, the value comes in less than $500 million, then what we would do is we would lease the wholesale system to private companies, and they would actually be in charge of getting the product to market and deciding what product would come out to market. But technically, the Commonwealth would still own the asset. They just wouldn't be running it.
How would that look if there were a private company leasing? Would it still be able to provide that type of new products we want? Or is it kind of holding the place until we do a divestiture later?
Oh, they would absolutely be able to provide the products that we wanted. As a matter of fact, the same companies that would purchase the private wholesale licenses would actually be the ones who were running the wholesale system under a leasing model. It would be your large wholesalers, such as Southern Wine and Spirits or Capital Wine and Spirits. And then you would have a handful of niche, smaller wholesalers that only peddled maybe one or two products. For example, an Argentinian wine company that operates out of Philadelphia. They would get part of the lease, and they would peddle their own products. I think it would be much easier to get the products to market, whether it's through privatizing wholesale or leasing, because these companies, they already have warehousing. They would be able to deliver the product directly to licensees, which is something the LCB doesn't do. And they would be able to negotiate pricing with licensees based upon the amount of product that the licensee wanted to purchase.
So either way, it's going to move the state in a better place when it comes to the wholesale side. And it does it quicker than the Senate had kind of outlined to get that done.
Absolutely.
What about the concern senators are raising about if you're in a rural area getting access, the concerns if a private competition would even open up in their areas? Is that addressed in the compromise? What does that look like?
Yes, it is addressed because, quite frankly, availability and accessibility of wine and spirits in our more rural areas was a key concern of a number of my members as well. So in the version of House Bill 790 that passed the House, we had a test in there. And the test said that when there is twice the number of private wine and spirits retailers plus grocery stores selling alcohol, then the state stores in that particular county would have to close. At no time may the LCB operate fewer than 100 state stores. So the Senate's concern was this is going to shut down the stores in the rural areas and they're not going to have any private entities.
Once they got to that 100 mark?
Yes, yes. So we added language, and actually the Senate had addressed language regarding availability and accessibility in their amendment to 790, but there was really no definition of what availability and accessibility meant. So in essence, the LCB would be able to keep stores open forever because they would be determining what availability and accessibility was. The members in the House believed that we actually needed to spell out what that availability and accessibility was. So we put language in there that defines it as a county having at least two private retail outlets within 10 miles of the state store that's scheduled to be closed.
And I think this is a really important point to understand because that is a concern of a lot of members, that you can rest assured that you're going to have private companies providing that service before the stores, state stores close down.
Exactly. And that comes, too, from Washington State. I mean, Washington State, when they privatized, and they only had to privatize the spirits end of the sales market, but when they privatized, they put a drop-dead end date for their state stores into the language that was in the referendum. So people didn't have time to get up and running. We learned from that mistake.
They had a rough start in Washington State.
Exactly, and now they're up and running, and from what I understand, they're doing very well. But we learned from their mistakes, and we tried to rectify them before we even passed the legislation.
Well, I'll just say on the Washington State, we did, looking back 1 year later, because they've been privatized for 1 year, and they have seen an increase in sales, an increase in tax revenue, an increase in jobs, and there's actually been a decrease in alcohol-related driving fatalities and arrests. And I think the one thing they have seen is a slight uptick in shoplifting, but you can see that the concerns about there just being, you know, an increase in drunk driving and social ills hasn't proven out in Washington State.
I'm glad you brought up the social ills because it's an interesting piece of information is on MADS website, and it shows that Pennsylvania is actually not doing so well with our numbers on DUIs and underage drinking compared with licensed states that surround us. Our numbers are actually much worse than the licensed states around us.
And that's one thing Commonwealth Foundation likes, is that right now the government having that kind of conflict of interest, both regulating and advertising, would be removed. And the House version, I think, had a extra safety that was put in place with troopers being allowed to go in and check places that sold alcohol. Can you discuss that?
Absolutely. That's part of the compromise language, and you're right, it was in the original version of 790 as it passed the House. It's interesting to note, and a lot of people don't realize this, state troopers do not staff the Bureau of Liquor Control Enforcement. The Bureau of Liquor Control Enforcement does fall under the Pennsylvania State Police, but it is staffed by what's called civilian officers. So your undercover officers that are going into these licensed establishments are not full cops. So if they go into an establishment in downtown Harrisburg, for example, and they see a bartender serve a visibly intoxicated person, they can send a citation to the bar owner for serving a VIP. However, when that VIP gets off his bar stool and walks outside and gets in his car, the officer can't do anything. He can't stop that person from driving drunk. If it was a full state trooper, he would be able to do that. And I think that would seriously cut down on Pennsylvania's DUIs, and I think it would cut down on some of our more problem establishments that where there's drug deals going down, gun deals, etc. An actual state police trooper would be able to arrest those people versus just giving a citation to the bar owner.
Right, so there's some great safety additions that I think are important that are included in the bill.
Exactly.
What does the compromise language look like when it comes to who can sell alcohol? Whether it's beer distributors, your taverns, what does that look like?
Well, we did make some major changes to the House bill, the House version of 790, with regard to retail sales. In the original version that we passed in the House, we had created a couple of new licenses, specifically a grocery store license and a retail wine and spirits license that we gave to beer distributors first. The Senate language seemed to want to go with more of a permitting route, whereby they would give special wine and spirits permits to beer distributors, to restaurateurs, taverns, etc. So what we did as sort of a compromise was we kept the grocery store license. It's a limited number. Based on population, there would be approximately 825 in the entire state, and it is solely for the sale of wine. While we understand that the general public would really like to see beer in the aisles in their local grocery store, we in the House understood that beer is already privately sold, and we're not trying to change the way beer is sold. We're trying to change the way wine and spirits are sold. Therefore, we only put wine in the aisles of our grocery stores. In addition, we adopted a lot of the permits that the Senate had put into their version. So the beer distributors would still be able to obtain a wine and spirits permit so that they would be the sole one-stop shop for wine, spirits, and beer. In addition, restaurateurs, they could get a wine-to-go permit or a spirits-to-go permit. They could get both, but they're limited in the number of bottles they could sell in a single transaction.
So it's a lot of what the Senate had wanted on that side, plus the additional license for grocery stores to sell wine.
Correct.
Other changes?
There was a couple of miscellaneous provisions, you know, liquor code cleanup items that the Senate had placed into their amendment to 790. We kept all of those. And something that seems to have fallen by the wayside in the Senate amendment were some of the provisions for state store employees. We do put those back in the compromise language. But by and large, that covers what our compromise that we had offered the Senate in late June.
We really appreciate that the House put together the compromise language because we think it's very important that we get this done. Commonwealth Foundation partnered up with Keystone Politics recently to release a poll showing that Pennsylvanians overwhelmingly support privatization, but it also transcends party lines. So Republicans, Democrats, even union households want to see privatization happen. And one of the interesting things of the survey said that it is actually the people who are shopping, drinking wine, spirits, and beer who want privatization, and the people who are kind of apathetic or opposed are really ones who don't drink, who don't know the system as well. And so through this proposal, I really think we'd be able to bring the choice and competition, the selection that Pennsylvanians want and deserve.
I couldn't agree more. I'm very excited about this language, and I'm hopeful that talks can be ongoing with the Senate and we can come to a final agreement and get this bill to the governor's desk.
Well, thanks for updating our listeners, Marsha, on what the liquor privatization status is. And hopefully next time you're back on the show, we'll be talking about how privatization happened and is being implemented and the success. That's all for this edition of the Box Podcast. As always, you can find more at commonwealthfoundation.org. Thanks for joining us.